from the racetracks around Australia, here's Inside Motorsport.
And good evening once again for another edition of Inside Motorsport. Craig Gravel on the other side of the table this evening, and Colin Ford behind the panel, and boy, as they say, it's all go, go, go. And once again, there's lots of results, lots of things happening in motorsport all around the world and all around Australia. And Craig, interesting, the results of the Brazilian Grand Prix, all those people looking at planks under cars and then having them put back in again, and who knows what's happening in Formula One.
The controversy continues quite dramatically there, and well, David Coulthard doesn't get any points for two disastrous rounds for the McLaren team, whilst Ferrari are off to a flyer with Michael 2-for-2.
Yeah, I'd say that certainly there'll be a few of the people in the Ferrari team celebrating heavily. And, of course, now they go to the San Marino Grand Prix, which is sort of in their backyard. So the Tifosi will be out in force. And I'd say that McLaren and Mercedes have got it all uphill from here on in.
Yeah, it does seem that way. But we've got plenty of news coming from the United States. And whilst I'm talking about news from the United States, if you are online or you're going to be online, please, very quickly, don't tune off the radio, of course, but www.nhra.com. I am hoping that it's still up there. They had a full spread of April 1st news reports. They had the NHRA Online Nationals, which was just absolutely some of the funniest stuff you'll ever see. The one that I'll tell you about, Tony Shoemaker admitting on NHRA Online that he drives with his eyes closed.
Well, I think there's a few drivers in drag racing who drive with their eyes closed. All they've got to do is point in one direction.
Some amazing stuff there. And it's good to see that people who take themselves very, very seriously on 364 days of the year can have a bit of fun and frivolity on April 1. Now, whilst we're talking about NASCAR Winston Cup news out of America, Adam Petty will make his NASCAR Winston Cup debut, his first start in a Winston Cup car, but Dad, Kyle Petty, has missed the cut. So, an up and down weekend for the Petty clan, who are all quite concerned over Lee Petty's wife, who is quite ill at the moment in North Carolina. So, Adam Petty making his debut on the Texas 500. I think it's the DirecTV 500. And it's going to be an interesting one. Another win in the Busch Series goes to Mark Martin. It took him a while to get his 50th, but his 51st came only 2 weeks later, when the Winston Cup star Mark Martin won for the fourth time in five Busch Grand National starts this year, after taking a rain-delayed Albertsons 300 at the Texas Motor Speedway. Even with the weather forcing a 4.5-hour delay, the race finished under lights at the 1.5-mile speedway. Martin took the lead for good with 35 laps left in the 200-lap race, and he finished 0.403 seconds ahead of Matt Kenseth in the Chevrolet.
Yeah, and in some Formula One news, Arrows is the latest of the Formula One and Top Line Racing teams to introduce their own two-seater. Arrows have built a two-tandem Formula One machine, similar to those used by McLaren, Ganassi and Formula Palmer, and they launched their two-seater version on Friday, March 31st, the day before April Fool's. I suppose if they launched it on the Saturday, they could have had people saying, oh yeah, come on, pull our legs. But the car was shaken down at Pembrey and completed 40 trouble-free laps, with Arrow's former 3000 boss Paul Stoddart, who undertook the initial testing of the machine, very, very fulsome in his praise for the car. He said, the drivability and handling of this car surpasses many F1 cars and is a real pleasure to drive. Quite apart from more obvious first impressions of riding in the car, comments from those who have experienced passenger rides was of the excellent viewing, which is very important if they want to get a real bird's eye view of what Formula One is all about. Apparently, the Arrows car is the way they've designed where the passenger sits gives a much better view than like with the McLaren car, where they've got that big sort of headrest for the driver and sort of front setup. They've got different setups so that the actual passenger can actually see what's going on ahead of them, which I'm sure would make a few of them look for the brown underwear.
I don't know if you caught it today on Channel 10, but they actually had the television coverage from the first round of the Le Mans Series 2000, and right on cue, as television normally is. They're showing you round one whilst round two has been completed. And Jorgen Muller of Monaco, driving a double stint at the end, has teamed up with Formula One and kart veteran JJ Lehto to wheel the BMW V12 to victory on Saturday night's Le Mans Series race, the Grand Prix of Charlotte at the Lowe's Motor Speedway. The Lehto and Muller combination posted a 7.884 second margin of victory over the Panos LMP1, driven by Jan Magnussen of Denmark and David Brabham of England. Guess those copywriters don't know that he actually was born here. The win was the fifth for the BMW prototypes in American Le Mans competition, and the first season triumphs after Sebring, Simona, Monterey and Las Vegas in 1999. In the GTS class, Team Orca posted its seventh straight American Le Mans win, with Carl Wendlinger of Austria and Orva Beretta on the wheel of their Dodge Viper. They're a very dominant Team Orca in that class. Sascha Massin of Germany teamed with Bob Wolfert of France to wheel a Porsche 911 GT3R past the BMW, driven by Peter Cunningham. Another Australian that has West Bend with consonant credits on his name. 4 minutes from the end of the endurance race to claim the GT prize, the second in a row for the Dick Barber Racing Porsches. Lehto had put his BMW on pole position for the race, but was passed by Magnussen in the early going. The race came down to a battle of two cars, that being Lehto and Muller. They elected to leave Muller in the car for the final pit stop, and it gave them the edge at the end. The team strategy put us in the position at the right time, said Muller. It was brilliant teamwork. At the end, I wasn't pushing. Privateer Raffaella Lolan, driven by Mimmo Schizzarella and Didier de Ralegillis of Monaco, finished third, followed by the second BMW prototype, driven by Bill Oblin of California, and Jean-Marc Gunon of France took out fourth place.
Yeah. Well, last weekend saw British motorsport history being made at Thruxton with the very first Power Tour motorsport show entertaining a bumper crowd at the Hampshire Circuit. Despite variable weather, there was some great racing from the championships and thrilling conclusions to the green flag British Formula 3 and Privilege Insurance British GT Championship races topped the bill. One of the most popular features for the crowd was having former touring car champion John Clellan go live on the circuit public address system during the GT race. Clellan's expert and forthright opinions direct from the driving seat during the incident-packed race added further to the excitement and drama, and was the first time ever at a British circuit that a driver had talked live to the audience. I can imagine some of Clellan's comments. I'm sure they had the finger on the button.
Yes.
Other notable features of the on-track activity include the first Formula 3 victory for teenage Brazilian sensation Antonio Pisonia, the debut of the TBR Cerberus Speed 12 and Marcus Mantis GTO GT cars.
Martin Brundle's going to be testing one of those next weekend at Croft.
Mm.
Not next weekend at Croft. This Tuesday at Croft. Mm. He can't hang around for the Power Tour event there because he's got something like a Formula One race to commentate.
Yeah. Also have the UK racing debut of the Porsche 911 GT3R, the UK racing debut of the Ford Focus, the Alfa Romeo 156, the Proton GTI and the Honda Accord in the National Saloon race. And the results there over those main races, the British GT race Thruxton, that was run by Rob Sherl and David Warnock in the Lister Storm. In second place was Australian Neil Cunningham and Stephen Day in the Chrysler Viper, with Ian Astey and Chris Ellis third in the Lotus Esprit. Actually, those little Lotus Esprits are going very well. In the Formula 3 race, Antonio Pisonia won in what was a fairly wet race in the Dallara Mugen Honda, from Thomas Schechter in another Dallara Mugen Honda. Narain Karthikeyan came third in the Stewart Racing Dallara Mugen Honda, then Matt Davies, Andy Priolo and Milos Pavlovic. And in the National Saloon Championship, because these guys are the guys who are going to back up in the British Touring Car Championship.
Well, that's interesting. Are they? When the Power Tour is going
to... Some of them do. Some of them will do the full Power Tour, some of them will do the British Touring Car Championship. But Dan Eaves in the Peugeot 306 GTI was the winner from Matt Kelly in the Nissan Primera. Tobia Massini in the Honda Integra R. Tony Ruokkonen in a Peugeot 306. Simon Harrison, a guy used to run a Peugeot in the British Touring Car Championship, as a privateer, he's running a Ford Focus and finished fifth. And James Kay, another privateer, and a guy's made appearances at Bathurst a couple of times. I think his first appearance at Bathurst was in 94 with Greg Murphy in Toyota Carina, and he finished sixth in the Honda Accord. And actually, interesting to see this week that they announced that the co-driver for Paul Morris at Bathurst in the FIA 1000 will be none other than British Touring Car privateer Matt Neal. So he'll be teaming up with Paul Morris in the Big Kev's Commodore. And knowing Matt Neal, he will thoroughly enjoy himself once again at Bathurst, but again, he'll have the usual trick of adjusting to the rear-wheel drive and the horsepower of the V8s.
Mm. Well, Brian Simo, driving the number 88 Tony Brahms Mustang, won his second VF Goodrich Trans Am Series race in as many events, claiming a 0.689 second margin of victory over Paul Genestaloni at the Lowe's Motor Speedway. So Simo, 2 from 2 in Trans Ams. In Indy Racing Northern Lights Series news now, and Dick Simon, he has filled out a second entry for the 84th Indianapolis 500, with Wim Ekmans being his teammate to Stephen Gregoire at the Greatest Spectacle in Motor Racing, coming up on the 28th of May. In a World of Outlaws news, Danny Lasowski wasted no time getting around the pole sitter Greg Honnett and riding off into the sunset to capture the Southern Bleacher Classic at the new Texas Motor Speedway dirt track. And Jaguar has become the second Formula One team to sign with Michelin when the French tyre manufacturer makes its return to the World Championship in 2001, Jaguar joining Williams. Interesting to see the two British teams signing up with the French tyre manufacturer. Mm. In Formula 3000 news, you mentioned about the Arrows two-seater. Well, the Eurobet Arrows Formula 3000 team has been launched at the Arrows Formula One team's HQ in Leafield, Oxfordshire. The team, formerly the European Edenbridge, became the junior branch of the Arrows F1 team last year. Lead driver will be Arrows Formula One test driver Mark Webber. That has a good ring to it, doesn't it?
Mm.
Who won races in the British Formula 3 and with the Mercedes team in the FIA GT series. Other car will be driven by German F3 champion Christian Albers. The Coral Eurobet, an online betting service, has taken on the role of title sponsor. The Arrows Formula 3000 squad will be, which was unveiled on Thursday, has considerable internet-based backing this season with ManUnited.com, that's the Manchester United Football Club's website, and Shello Broadband, a leading internet service provider, also sponsoring the teams.
Mm. And, of course, closer to home, news this week that once again in V8 supercars, the parity bogeyman rears its ugly head, with talk that there will be a review of the parity between Ford and Holden before the Clipsal 500 in Adelaide next weekend. So at this point in time, we're waiting to see what the results will be, but the usual trick, we'll hear probably just before the Adelaide 500 about what has been done to possibly adjust the parity between Ford and Holden, whether anything happens at all. And the other interesting news this week, one of the rumours doing the rounds, the fact that because of television commitments, the 7 network is maybe pushing to move this year's October Bathurst race they normally have on the October long weekend. It had already been rumoured to be pushed back to around about the weekend of the 13th, 15th, or I think it was the 21st, 22nd, and they are now saying that very likely it could be moved now to March 2001, so as to avoid clashes with the Olympic Games, the Paralympics coverage, and also to allow teams more time to get things set up. It would also avoid any conflict with AFL coverage, etc. So no doubt we'll probably hear more on that as time goes through. But they're talking the fact that if it does go to March next year, it will be back to a 1,000-kilometre endurance format with a combined grid of super tourers, V8-powered future tourers, and very likely boosted by super production cars. As well, this weekend there has been testing at Malala of the new production Category 4 Commodores and Falcons, which is the one to replace the HQ series.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently that testing has been going quite well, and the guys have been putting down some quite respectable times, as well as been some testing there of some of the Formula Holden competitors getting ready for the support race, the Formula Holden support race for the Clipsal 500, and unfortunately for one of the drivers, they had a bit of drama, and our local correspondent there, Dave Langfield, he was able to catch it on film, so no doubt he'll probably offer the photographs to the driver for the appropriate sum, and you might see the next issue of Auto Action. But there's lots of things going on over in Malala. A lot of teams are testing over there, ready for the Clipsal 500, which will be running next weekend, and we'll have reports on the Clipsal 500. The other thing, of course, is that Queensland Raceway, which was up in doubt in terms of what was going to happen there, has been saved, being sold to a consortium of Queensland-based motorsport enthusiasts. The consortium is believed to have paid $3.5 million for the financially troubled racetrack after state government ordered the company to be, the company that built and operated the venue, be put in the hands of receivers. So it'll be interesting to see now exactly what happens with Queensland Raceway, and in particular what happens with their Shell Championship Series round, which is scheduled to take place on July 2. Hopefully between now and then they can get that sorted out and we'll understand where things are going at that point in time.
Mm. In drag racing news now, the 2000 Andra Drag Racing Tri-Series got off to a great start last Saturday with the first round at Coonawarra Dragway between Narracot and Penola in south-east of Adelaide. The organisers of the event, the South East Drag Racing Association, were delighted with the support of the racers and spectators. The first round of the the 2000 Andra Drag Racing Tri-Series marked one of the first times an Andra Championship Series has been staged outside the major capital city tracks. The Tri-Series is a three-event points-based competition running at the tracks Narracot, Mildura and Whyalla. The four Andra Championship Eliminations, Modified Super Sedan, Modified Bike and Super Street are eligible, and a point system based on an Andra Australian Drag Racing Series is used, with bonuses for all entrants attempting to qualify at each round and a 50% overall bonus for the final race of the series. The second round will be staged at Mildura's Sunset Strip, what an appropriate name for a drag racing facility, on Saturday the 22nd of April, with the final round at Whyalla's Steel City Dragway on May 14th. The points, or the winners at the moment, are modified Paul Wocombe on 110, Jeff During on 90, Super Sedan Gary Johnson on 110, Andrew Dean on 90, Super Street Brenton Stewart's on 110, Alex Van Lulven is on 90 points there. Whilst we're still on drag racing news, of course, the Mack Tools Gator Nationals from Gainesville, Florida was held last weekend, and it was Doug Kalita in his final round, which was the 1999 AAA Finals, which he won against Shoemaker, and Tony Shoemaker, well, going second. But look at the reaction times, a 4.62 for Doug Kalita, running the course in 4.614 at 313.58 miles per hour over Shoemaker in the Exide Batteries Dragster. A 0.47 reaction time with a 4.679 at 314.97. So plenty of racing action there, and Doug Kalita getting the win in Top Fuel. In funny cars, Jerry Tolliver in the WWF Racing Camaro managed to get over the US Tobacco's Camaro of Ron Capps with a 5.071 at 295.5 miles per hour. Ron Capps with a 6.185 at 155.76, taking the loss. Capps had pulled the hole shot on Tolliver, but then he started to lose traction when he had to get off the pedal. It was all over, and Tolliver had driven by in the World Wrestling Federation car. In Pro Stock, it was WJ Warren Johnson in the Goodwrench Firebird once again making all the right moves. He ran a 6.9 at 199.35, and just how often do you see Warren Johnson pulling that combination? He put on a short staging battle, but Warren Johnson went in first and ended the battle. He gave up a slight starting advantage to Troy, but then Troy's car shook and Johnson was away free. Troy, once again coming up short in a final round, is still seeking his first event win. Warren Johnson, though, with his 80th event win, is moving closer to Bob Glidden's career win record of 85.
And in some world rally news, it's interesting to note that in the UK, the Martini Ford rally team had been doing a lot of work in repairing and fixing some oil pump drive problems that had plagued the Ford Focus rally cars over the last few rallies. At the Rally of Portugal, Colin McRae's chances were taken out when a broken oil pump drive resulted in the whole block, and similar problems had taken out Carlos Sainz. And it seems that all that work in trying to fix those oil pump problems are paying off, because in the late, at the end of stages yesterday in the Catalunya rally, Colin McRae was leading the rally in his Ford Focus from Richard Burns in Subaru Impreza, with the local man Carlos Sainz putting in a late charge, narrowing the gap to the leaders after seeing his second fastest stage time in a row. Following along was Tommy Mäkinen and his Mitsubishi Lancer, who was sitting quite some back, having lost time on stage 11 after he'd lost brakes 5 kilometres from the finish, but he was 35 seconds off the leader. I think losing brakes in the Catalunya rally would not be great fun, because it is a rally that has a large number of tarmac sections. Sitting in fifth place was Gilles Pinizzi in his Peugeot 206 with Marcus Gronholm following, and Francois Delacour. So we've got all three of the Peugeot 206s sitting there in fifth, sixth and seventh places. Didier Auriol sitting in eighth in his Seat Cordoba. Marco Martin in the Toyota Corolla ninth, and Arnim Schwartz in the Skoda Octavia sitting in 10th. So things happening over there in the Catalunya rally. The final stage is being run today, which will be later this evening Australian time, and of course only early morning over there in Catalunya. But hopefully we'll see maybe a bit of change of fortune for the Ford rally team with those fixes. And still talking rallying, Australian rallying duo Simon and Sue Evans will be mounting a serious Formula 2 assault on the Asia Pacific Championship in a Volkswagen Golf Mark IV car. They will be contesting the championship, starting with the Rally of Canberra on May 4, and then going on to contest the Rally of New Zealand, Rally of China, if it goes, because there's still a bit of a question mark over what's going to happen with Rally of China at this point in time, Rally of Malaysia, Rally of Thailand, and Rally of Australia. And Evans is also said he may contest the Rally of Melbourne for sentimental reasons, being a rally that he's run and won a number of times. But good to see another Australian moving out into the international rally world. But on bad news front, we heard today that Michael Guest had crashed his his Hyundai coupe rally car during the Catalunya rally. Apparently hit a rock, took a chunk out of the side of one of the tyres, allowed the moose to escape from the tyre, and had then crashed the car when he came to the next corner rather heavily into a tree. And not good to see for Michael Guest. He actually looked like he was getting things under control there with the rallying, a bit of change of luck, but it had turned around and it had bitten him, truly.
It has indeed. In fact, the first round of the Asian Pacific Rally Championship is underway as we speak. It is the Rally of Indonesia. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to get through to anyone there, but we are looking forward to seeing some of the results as the second round is, of course, here in Canberra, at Rally of Canberra. A man joining us on the line now who has had some great news throughout the week is Colin Mygrove, and after a recent delay, a statement by the Western Australian Minister for Planning, Graham Kereth, has given the green light to the International Drag Racing and Speedway Complex to be built near Kiawana, south of Perth, with the work expected to commence sometime this week. Colin Mygrove, it has been a trying time for you, knowing that Claremont was coming to an end, but there was no permanent facility already in place for Western Australian Speedway and drag racing fans. And, sorry about that, Con.
It's okay, mate.
But yeah, it must have been a trying time for you all, knowing that Claremont was closing, and there wasn't a permanent facility for Speedway fans in the West.
Well, it sure was. It was nerve-wracking. I suppose I've put in probably two of the worst years of my life, and probably since January of this year, has been the worst I've ever experienced in any way, shape or form. No one in their wildest dreams could really imagine what we've gone through.
Now, with this facility, the plans make it once again look like that Perth is going to be benefiting from the best speedway and drag racing facilities in the country, and it does make a lot of sense to have two bodies working together and sharing common facilities, which will mean that you can then both pool your resources and both pool facilities, and mean that things like kiosks and toilet blocks and everything like that really can be made first class, and it also gives the benefit of they're not just there for one section of the motorsport community.
Well, I'm might go as far as to say, and please forgive me if you think I'm boasting, but I don't mean to be that way. I'd say it'll probably go amongst one of the best circuits in the world. The spectator facilities have been very much taken. We're building an amphitheatre type situation, and I suppose it would be not unlike the Empire Games Stadium that we have here in Western Australia, in an amphitheatre type situation. So spectators will sit only in the main and the back straights. There'll be no one on the turns for safety reasons. The pits will be a dual-purpose pits. That'll be for drag racing on the Saturday nights and speedway on the Friday nights. We'll have proper scrutineering bays. We'll have weigh bridges built into place so that cars can be weighed and the likes on the race night. And each driver will be allocated a pit space for the various divisions they'll be racing in. And, well, virtually they'll become permanent. So whereas at Claremont at the moment we've got a pit, or we've had a pit, that whilst we might have probably the most room in Australia, about 95% is not usable.
Well, we did have to share it with a few of the equestrian variety of horsepower.
Yeah, we sure did. So.
And they always left us something to enjoy in our pit areas and pit stalls.
No, they didn't really. They never made our lot, what you could say, a happy one, because there was often complaints about the racing cars and that. So I believe going to a purpose-built speedway. I don't think there are many purpose-built speedways being built in this country in the last 10 or 12 years, so what we've got now is state-of-the-art. We will be housed, our offices will be housed down there. We'll have a car park for 5,000 cars, and I think we've got about 7 hectares of actual pit space. The actual venue itself is going to cost in the vicinity of $16 million to build. We have to widen the road outside Anchortel Road. Traffic lights have gone on, and we're building a fairly sizable entrance road, which you'll, when you come into the conference, you'll come to the pits first and drive on to the actual car park. So, and we'll have a very impressive entry statement. You'll go down a boulevard with London flame trees in the centre of it. And when you walk inside the ground, you take the choice of whether you're going to the speedway or the drag racing, but say a speedway, meaning for argument's sake. We have a sideshow area there. We'll have stores there that will sell the likes of T-shirts and caps, etc., the normal things that go with motorsport. And then you have a choice of plat seating, which is the normal plastic-type seating, or terrace seating, or even bank seating, so or bank standing. So you have a choice of 3 different prices to choose from. And, of course, if you take the more expensive seating, like the plat seats or the back straight terraced area, that will give you also access to pits. Now, this particular venue, we will be encouraging spectators to be in there all the time, so it wouldn't be unusual, for argument's sake, if there were 4,000 or 5,000 people watching the speedway. There could be that amount also in the pit area watching the riders and drivers prepare for racing.
Mm. And I would imagine with these level of facilities, season tickets now can be offered, and seating allocations can be made so that people who are hard, die-hard race fans can say, I am sitting, you know, on the top row of Section A, and I'll have that seat for the entire racing season.
Well, I'll tell you a little story. Yesterday I went to lunch with Kim Ledger, who was a former West Australian speed car champion. Now, Kim Ledger is the father of Heath Ledger, who is currently starring in a film with Mel Gibson. He's playing Mel Gibson's son. It's about a film in the Civil War. Now, Kim was a West Australian speed car champion. Your dad would know him well. And young Heath used to push his daddy out onto the racetrack. So Kim yesterday said to me, I want to be the number one ticket holder. So that gives you an example of things that are happening already with people's interest in speedway. Just this last weekend, for argument's sake, last Thursday and Friday, between the two nights, in excess of 26,000 people went to the Claremont Showgrounds to say goodbye to the grand old lady.
Yeah, it's amazing, and it has really been sent off in fantastic style with the number of events, and then over the last 2 nights of racing that you've enjoyed, you really did salute every division that has been part of Claremont Speedway's history.
Yes, there was over $35,000 worth of prize money, and 300 competitors competed. Now, the lady that runs my T-shirt concession store, Cruise Designs, Diane Lester, she made a T-shirt, several sorts of T-shirts, and they're absolutely unbelievable. I don't think I've ever seen a T-shirt anywhere in the world. But on the back of one of the T-shirts, every competitor that competed over the last 2 nights of Claremont Speedway were their names on this T-shirt. And to my staff and to every driver, I gave each one of my staff and each one of my helpers and every one of my competitors a parchment certificate saying, this is to certify that Con Migro or Craig Revell or whatever it might be competed or participated in the final two meetings, end of an era, of Claremont Speedway, 1927-2000. Thank you.
Yeah, amazing, isn't
it? And, you know, really, it's been very touching. Another thing I'd like to say to you, that all the commercial television stations run huge stories building up to the final night. They did a wonderful tribute to us last night. The Sunday Times this morning in West Australia, a page and a half of highlights from the meetings over the two nights, and there was a full page of the West Australian on Thursday morning, there was a half a page in on Friday morning, and the West Australian tomorrow morning, that's the main morning newspaper here in Perth, will be doing another, I think Jonathan Cook said it'll be close to a page, if not it'll definitely be a half a page, tribute to the final two nights. So I suppose we'll get a bit of a bagging too, unfortunately, because we did finish late. It wasn't planned, that unfortunately every guy that raced there on the weekend all wanted to win a race, and you can imagine what that happened. The ingredients were set for dynamite at times, and a couple of times it exploded.
All right then, but will we see, because Speedway fans and fans in general will remember what happened to a little track over in New Zealand because called Western Springs. They missed a season of racing due to redevelopment problems, and it cut into them for about five seasons of building their fan base back up. Will the Motorplex be open for season 2000-2001?
Yes, it will. It'll be in November. There are very heavy penalties, and it's in the high five-figure mark if they don't finish, they'll complete the project on the correct time. And there was 1,100,000 metres of dirt to be moved because we're building an amphitheatre. Just for the people that like to have a little bit of a keep a record, the car track would be 500 metres wide to one lap. It'll be 22 metres wide in the straights and in the turns. Now, at Claremont currently, we have 22 metres wide in the turns, but 16 metres wide in the straights. It'll be a pure clay track. It'll be 1 metre high banking in the straights, 2.5 metre banking in the turns, and we're putting in an automatic watering system, so the track will stay watered, apart from when God does it, but it'll be stayed watered virtually 7 days a week. Inside the car track, the differentiation between the bike and the car track is a 0.5 metre wide concrete curb, which we'll have inside of that a motorcycle track, which will be 12 metres wide in the straights and 15 in the turns, and that'll be a decomposed granite dolomite type surface. So on a race night now, we will never have the problem again of when we build a car track, the bikes don't like it. When we build a bike track, the cars don't like it. So I believe that we're going to have the best of two worlds. Of course, the knockers are coming out already and saying to me that that will never work because bike tracks inside car tracks are no good. But one only has to cast their mind back to the boom days of Liverpool Speedway when the great Ollie Olsen and the likes came out, and that was successful speedway inside a car track.
And guess what? I remember the bike riders and MA complaining that when the riders fell off, they had to skid across the skid across the asphalt before they hit the wall.
Well,
like, hitting the wall right at the edge of the track is much better, thanks.
After this last week, I must say to you that I haven't always agreed with David Tapp, the editor of Speedway Racing News, about MA, but I've now, after many, many years, I'm convinced that they really don't care about speedway motorcycle racing. And that is probably the reason why the demise that we're seeing around the country. Now, I'm going to probably get shot from MA officials for saying this, but quite frankly, I just wonder really where they come from.
Well, Con, it has been great news. Just some of the figures that I would like to repeat, and you can confirm for Canberra politicians and officials to hear. The Motorplex, $16 million investment, as you have said, creating, in the construction phase alone, it is expected to create 279 full-time jobs.
Correct.
With a flow-on effect of 298 jobs.
Yes.
Now, you would be looking at, on race nights, be it drag racing or speedway, you'd be looking at another 30 permanent weekend jobs, I would imagine.
Well, yes, I employ in my speedway alone 120 staff on a temporary basis to conduct the race meetings. I would suggest we'd have another 120 volunteers like the various clubs.
Mm.
I think drag racing might not have as many as that. I have 8 full-time staff in the office because of the magnitude of our businesses, and I have a permanent track staff of 4. In addition to what we're going to be doing at this complex, because the Kwinana is an industrial area, and the politicians would understand this quite well, this particular venue, we're going to put a driver training facility, which will be operating 7 days a week, and we can operate at 7 different areas within the motorplex, and we're not going to be teaching the drivers how to drive a car skillfully or fast. We're going to teach them attitudes, And the idea, I believe that the Australian drivers, and I've driven extensively around the world, and I believe myself, quite frankly, that a lot of the drivers that are Australian, probably me included, Australians are very aggressive behind the wheel of a motor car. And it's our intention to cheat attitude, to try and get this aggression out of the Australian drivers. And we can do a little bit. I think if we can just improve that by 1%, we'll save the state government in Western Australia over $1 million. But I want to say something else about, whilst we're talking about politicians, Richard Court, the Premier of Western Australia, and Graham Turek, the Minister for Planning, they'd have to, if there was an Olympic Games or a gold medal, they'd have to both get a gold medal, because what they have done for the speedway and drag racing industries in this state is going to be the benchmark for all Australia to look at. It is the very first time ever in our history that Speedway has received any government's assistance when they've poured literally millions into horse racing, football, Australian rules, cricket, no doubt rugby, and Speedway has been always the poor relations. Richard Court and Graham Kirith both recognise that, and they've come forward with this wonderful plan to help us to be relocated to this location. And to them, it's a great credit to them, because they've received a lot of criticism. Unfortunately, the two local members down here that happen to be both Labor members, Mark McGowan and Norm Marlborough, and their attitude towards the Motorplex has been disgusting, to say the least. But I know for a fact that Kim Beazley doesn't think that way. And I know that Jeff Galt, the leader of the opposition here in Perth, who wrote to me and said to me that he supported the state government's decision in helping to relocate us. So apart from two politicians who have got their knickers in a knot or their nose out of joint, most of the politicians in the state are agreeable in it. And another thing is the fact that they understand that we are responsible for 139 different businesses that derive all or part of their income from their involvement just in speedway racing in Western Australia.
Yeah, and the great thing about a motorplex like that is you're going to also be increasing jobs. Because the bigger the industry gets, the more people required to build the cars, the more people required to make the trailers, to make the additions to the towing packs that the transporters need, and
yeah,
so on and so forth. And it really does, particularly with what you're going to be doing in an industrial estate. And we could see quite conceivably something like Concord in North Carolina, where you have garages eventually being built on the site so teams can be based at the racetrack.
Well, already the local real estate agent in the Kwinana, Rockingham, Hope Valley area have indicated there are a lot of already speedway and drag racing people looking at the possibility of purchasing properties close by to manufacture their engines and their race cars. We have four full-time racing car manufacturers here in Western Australia. We've got Michael Figlin, the Australian Speed Car Champion. He builds the Fighter. We have the most famous from Perth in Jeff Murphy, who builds his speed cars, sprint cars and Formula 500. We have Chris Carty, who is the brother of a leading driver, John Carty. And we have young Brad Chapman. So there are four big manufacturers. Then down in Albany, we have a gentleman by the name of Kevin Thayer. And I think he turns out about 18 or 20 V8 super sedans a season, and a whole lot of the street sedans. So, you know, really, when you look at it, for a small population that Western Australia has, there are 44 tracks for Cunnamulla to Esperance, and we have a very big support base of manufacturers and the likes that go towards making the sport really what it is.
Well, I hope that some of the people in the HD government can hear about this, because all too often talk about speedway and drag racing has fallen on deaf ears here, but they can find $3 million for a V8 supercar race, which gives minimal. I think five ACT competitors are going to be able to be part of it.
One thing that I think that you must say, and I'm not making excuses for those politicians in the ACT, but I will say, and you can probably tell them if they're not listening to the show, you can probably send them a copy of what I've got to say, is the fact that it's the people that are administrating the various sports have also got to be proactive, and they've got to demonstrate to the politicians, because the politicians are responsible for yours and my taxes. And the Speedway people, they have got to get off their backsides and also prove to these people that they are responsible, and there is a definite need for the sport of Speedway racing. And after all, it is an Australian sport, with the exception of course, the car racing is American, but the original Speedways in this country started in Maitland, New South Wales, back in 1923. 1927, it was in Claremont. Such was the success in 27 that John Hoskins took it to England that year, and it's now history. It's one of the biggest spectator in competitive sports in the world. So, and that's something that we all in Australia, and I as a West Australian, we are unbelievably proud of it. You just cannot believe the pride I have in my association with speedway racing and the fact that it is an Australian sport.
Yeah, it is indeed. And Conmigra, well, congratulations on a successful conclusion of Claremont Speedway and, well, a very challenging future out there at the Motorplex.
Yes, I thank you for that, and I just hope that that if people listening to the show, if they ever want to come over to West Australia after November of 2000, they make part of their itinerary to drop into West Australia. And I must say one thing, that my son Gavin, who was a leading sprint car driver in the state, and my marketing manager, has done a huge job, and I'm not patting him on the back because he's my son, because no one gets a pat on the back from Conmigra unless they really deserve it, and he's worked his little backside out, and we've got some very good sponsors, and we've got some great ideas, and his influence on the sport is paying dividends. And with our printed program on Friday night, it was about a 70-80 pager with four colour, and it's just an absolute credit to him and how things are going in this state. The state is, in my opinion, booming in speedway again.
All right, Tom Migro, it's been a pleasure as always, and we look forward to keeping in touch with you on how the building plans over there at the Motorplex keeps continuing on.
Well, I look forward to keeping in touch with you and to everyone that's supported me, and you in particular. God bless you, and let's keep this great sport alive.
Yes, indeed. And well, at Speedway, amazing. I'll just recap those numbers again as Con leaves us now. But the building of the brand new Motorplex, just have a listen to this. The building of the Motorplex is expected to create 279 full-time jobs, with a flow-on effect of 298. As you heard, Con employs 120 officials throughout the season on a part-time basis. Just amazing figures, and perhaps more people need to talk to the government and say, hey, drag racing and speedway are benefits to this city, not hindrances. But anyway, that's just how I see it. Colin, I'm sure you would agree.
Yeah, and the thing is too, you've got to look at that the opportunities are there to use those facilities for things like Simonax and the like. And if you've got the facilities built up, it really does help things.
Formula Holden's looking forward to returning to the Adelaide circuit, and Brenton Ramsey joining us on the line. It is a very interesting position that the championship is poised in. After we spoke to you last weekend, we saw a new winner in the series overall, with Christian Murchison in his rookie year taking out the victory there. And we just saw everyone compounding back in the pack and sort of concertinaing back up onto Simon Wills.
Yeah, it was a fantastic race at Eastern Creek, and that has really opened the championship wide open. Like you mentioned now, only 3 points separating Simon Wills from Christian Murchison, and then another three back to New Zealand driver Matthew Halliday. So it's really on now for the championship.
Mm, it is indeed, and Matthew Halliday joins us on the line from New Zealand. Matthew, what makes New Zealand racing drivers, so many New Zealand racing drivers, want to come over and be part of Australia's motor racing scene, and more particularly the Formula Holden division?
Well, for us over here, I mean, it's the next step. For us, we've got Formula Fords and we've got nothing else in New Zealand single-seater-wise, so to progress in motorsport, we have to go to Australia. It's too dear to go to any other country, and Australia is the most logical step for us, and it is it's within the same climate. I mean, Australia and New Zealand are very similar, and I mean, country-wise, countries, you know, population, we're sort of very similar, so to make the move over to Australia is the best logical step, and it's not too far away either, which is another bonus.
Mm. Do you get a lot of Australian motorsport in your TV coverage, considering you've had cable television or pay television for about 10 years longer than us as well?
Well, I think we actually get more motorsport coverage full stop. We get a lot of live stuff on just non-pay TV, and now we've got the V8 Supercars live and the Formula Holden's on a 1 week delay basis, so we're getting everything that's happening over there.
Brenton, it has been a pretty good start to the season, and the television package, which Channel 10 have been putting together, has expanded again on last year's coverage as well.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, obviously our championship has expanded out to 8 rounds, which is good for Formula Holden point of view, and the TV coverage is in line with that again, so again we're getting great exposure on trackside on the 10 network.
Now, I know you took out a brand new car for some testing this week, Brenton.
Yes, that's right. The Barana team actually put 95 together over the last few weeks. Actually, the boys have been working flat out, and we took that out yesterday and had a good run with it. Its very first run, and it was quite good. The car was very fast, and just unfortunately finished off the end of the day with a little bit of front wing damage, but we're hoping to get that back together for the Adelaide race.
And Matthew, who have you grown up with looking at as your heroes? Are they predominantly New Zealand drivers?
I think, you know, most drivers look into the Formula 1 arena to find the people they really respect. Paul Radisich and Craig Beard are two drivers that have helped me out. I've always gone to for advice, obviously been two of the top drivers from New Zealand a few years ago, and I always looked up to them and, you know, got advice off them. Even to this day, they're still helping me with advice, and, you know, everything they say I listen to, and they're doing a very good job, and hopefully we can get up there and do something like they're doing in the next couple of years.
You've had one driver that I would imagine that you competed against in Scott Dixon, making some good moves over in America.
Yeah, Scott's doing a really good job. I've been helped by Kenny Smith, who helped Scott, behind Scott, and, you know, he's got a lot of contacts, and I have raced with Scott from the time we were young, 8 years old, and kart racing all the way up. Haven't competed against him a lot in the car racing arena, but he's done a good job, and we hope to be right in there behind him in the next couple of years.
And you mentioned you were racing in Formula Ford. I take it without too much doubt that you started in karting?
Yeah, karting. I'm only in my second year of car racing at this stage. We've done the New Zealand Formula Ford series, which is only six rounds over the Christmas break time, then straight into the Holdens for 1 year, and then we're in our second year now. Hopefully, if we can have a good year this year, we can move on to something overseas the following year.
How hard is it to get sponsorship from New Zealand companies so you can afford to come over to Australia?
No, it's very difficult. Now we've got the TV coverage, it's making it a lot easier for us. I've just signed up a new sponsor the other day, which is going to help us for the rest of the Australian Championship, which we'll announce just before Adelaide. That's a big break for us. Last year we had Challenge Recruitment, which helped us out a great deal. Without them, we wouldn't have done the championship. We're hoping we can maybe get them back on board for the rest of this championship, and if we're in a good position to try and win the championship, I think we're going to need all that kind of support we can get, because we've been struggling away with probably one of the lowest funded teams out there. Graham Watson's given me the opportunity, along with my teammate Chris Staff, to keep carrying on without much money, and, you know, it's thanks to him that we're going. Hopefully we can get a little bit of a reasonable budget behind us, enable us to do some good testing, and we'll, I'm sure, give Simon and the rest of the front guys a good hard run for their money.
Now, these cars are predominantly over here in Australia. How do you do the testing, and how do you do the training needed to be able to drive one?
As far as testing goes, we haven't done a huge amount. We've done a little bit last year when we got the new car going. Training-wise, I mean, it's not a problem to do the training back here, because, like I said before, the climate's very much similar to Australia over here. A little bit more rain, but, you know, it's easy to come home, do the training, and then head back over whenever I'm needed. Obviously, depending what happens down the track, I wouldn't mind basing myself over there, but for the moment, it's just been easier to travel backwards and forwards.
Well, Brenton, there's no shortage of New Zealand involvement in the V8 supercars, and another driver who has got quite a bit of New Zealand help is Tim Lay, who we'll be speaking with just in a few moments.
Yeah, Tim, obviously he had a nightmare run at Eastern Creek just recently, so he'll be looking to really consolidate some points at this stage in Adelaide. But I might just mention, while we're talking about countries, I've just also heard that Akihiro Asai, who's actually the lap record holder at the Adelaide track, will be coming back to this race as well. He's from Japan, so there's a real mixing pot going on for the Holden at the moment.
And, of course, that New Zealand connection is Greg Murphy, the car owner of Tim Lay.
Yeah, Greg has done a lot of work in Formula Holden. Actually, in his first races in Formula Holden, he ran with Barana, and then after that, his father bought a car, and they were running that under the Murphy Motorsport banner. So Tim driving for Murphy Motorsport together with Peter Hill. So, yeah, there's a lot of ties to New Zealand for Tim, and also for a lot of the guys in the field.
Mm. Now, Matthew, it is a very daunting place, I would imagine, going to race over at Adelaide with its Formula One history. And now, although it's not the same circuit, it is still reeking with that tradition.
Yeah, I mean, it's excellent to go to a circuit you used to watch on TV when you were young, watch all the big guys driving around. Just another circuit at the end of the day, and you know, you only enjoy it if you're going well and running up the front. Last year we had a a good run around the other car. It was going good. It was my second meeting, and I really got the grips of the circuit early on. No one else has been testing this, and no one's got an advantage, and that suits me perfectly.
Well, Matthew, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you, and we look forward to talking right throughout the 2000 series, and we'll look forward to that announcement of a new sponsorship deal for you as well.
Yeah, no, we hope we can keep going on and have a good run. We've had a little bit of bad luck at the start of the season, but, you know, we're getting there bit by bit, and hopefully next time we talk to you, we'll have got a few race wins under our belt.
All right, thanks very much, Matthew Halliday.
Thank you.
Brenton Ramsey, is that something that Formula Holden is looking at, being involved in the race of 1,000 years?
I guess that's difficult for me to say at this stage. I mean, I guess, you know, we'd always keep our options open, but at the end of the day, that's something for the administrators of Formula Holden to negotiate about and decide. At this stage, I can't say that I've heard anything, but of course, anything could change. But I think the main focus is on the championship, and obviously at that stage of the year as well, if we look to the Tasman Cup, which will be running in New Zealand, and the New Zealand Grand Prix in December, that may present a logistics problem. So I would say that the chances probably at this stage would be slight.
And Tim, the cost of being in a top quality car in the Formula Holden, I know that Kmart, I see in your car, has given you some support there. But when we're talking about, I think I've heard in the rumours of $50,000 to $60,000 to run a Formula Ford, and naturally enough, they're far more superior in technology in a Formula Holden. What sort of costs are involved?
Really, running budget for the championship is to look at it realistically and to run at the front and be competitive and have a chance at, you know, campaigning to win the championship. You're looking in excess of $200,000 to run the season. Now, Formula Ford is you're looking at about half to a little bit more than that to do the season. But like I said before, they're high technical machines. They require a lot of maintenance. The gearboxes require a lot of maintenance, and with replacing of gears and synchros and all that sort of type of gear before each event, and that's what, you know, those sorts of costs come into it, and it's you know, it's not cheap, and really it's a fraction of the cost it is overseas to do a season of Formula 3000 or something, which is I'm pretty sure 1.5 million, you know, so it's you've got to look at it in those type of aspects, but it's still a lot of money, and it's very hard to raise that sort of money in Australia. It's you know, it's quite near impossible, actually, to be honest with you, and you've just got to keep chipping away. And, you know, at the moment I'm just doing it as a race by race program, and it's you know, it's certainly not easy to raise that type of money. It works out at about $20,000 to $25,000 a race, and the team and the driver have to help to contribute to that. So it's, you know, like I say, it's tough work.
Your eventual goals, obviously, to stay in open wheels or to make a move over to the tin tops.
Well, I think realistically, I'm sort of I'm 23 years old now, and I've got to look at it in proportion of, you know, if I've got to go overseas, if I want to go to Indy Lights, I've got to find $1 million to race over there and take that with me. I mean, it's like I was saying before, it's quite tough. I think realistically, if I can sort of set my goals at a V8 drive in Australia, then that way I can sort of I can comfortably work at that and make a living from doing what I enjoy. So, you know, I'm a bit of a realist, and I think that's probably the ultimate goal that I've got to achieve this year.
And Tim, going to Adelaide for the first time, I think how hard do you think it will be to get yourself turned onto the track? And a street circuit is naturally enough not going to be the best environment to get into for the first day or so.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be a problem, to be honest with you. I think I'm very confident in the car at the moment. I feel I'm driving it quite well, apart from obviously haven't had some good results to date, but we've been very reasonably quick, and like I say, we've got a good team, a good bunch of guys, and we'll just get there and set the car up as quickly as possible, and I'm quite confident we'll be on the pace there. I can't see it being a problem, to be honest with you.
And playing a bit of Sega and Nintendo just to get the corners down?
Yeah, you've got to get on the old Sony PlayStation, I think.
All right, then. Well, Tim, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you, and we do look forward to seeing how you progress next weekend. And the big thing, Brenton, next weekend is live television coverage both afternoons on Channel 10. No week's delay for this weekend, for next weekend's event.
Yeah, so I'm not sure exactly whether the Formula Holden races will go to air during that live coverage or not. I definitely know that they will probably run in the trackside episode the week later, but a definite plus to have that live coverage, and it just reflects the size of this event. Just talking to the guys, I mean, as far as Formula Holden is concerned, this Adelaide 500 is probably like the Bathurst of Formula Holden. Everybody comes out of the woodwork. We've got a bumper field of cars, I think about 21 or 23 cars. So this is a huge race for Formula Holden. One race on the Saturday, one race on the Sunday. A crowd of something like 150 or 160,000 people over the 3 days. Yeah, it's a massive event, and the live coverage on Channel 10 is fantastic.
And no doubt you're also looking at another big event, another big street race, of course, the GMC 400, and becoming part of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be another great opportunity for some of the Formula Holden guys to get on the street circuit and mix things up. I mean, with the street circuit, it's quite different, I think, actually, to where the guys have run in Eastern Creek, and they're only going to have limited time on the Friday in two practice sessions, and also a bit of a different format with a qualifying Saturday morning and a race only a couple of hours after that. So the pressure is really on the drivers to get things right in a very short space of time.
Brenton Ramsey, thanks very much for your time. Matt Waddell joins us on the line as we're rounding very close to the end of Inside Motorsport for this week. And, well, the Forest Rally, some major changes there with the location of the Forest Rally moving about 3 hours south of Perth this weekend.
Yeah, that's right. Good evening and hello to all of you listeners. We're all the way down south near the town of Busselton, which the Queen popped up in, of all places, during the week. People may have seen it on the news.
Obviously wanted to check out all the new cars and stars.
Well, that's right, that's right. In fact, she's been stalking a couple of our rally people around the country, is the theory, because that she's been, had a look at some testing which was happening in Canberra a little while ago as well, last week with the rally. So she's getting in with the Australian Rally Championship.
Yeah, well, that's good to see. And, well, heat number one dominated by Possum Bourne and Cody Croker in their WRC and Group N cars, respectively.
Well, that's correct, and that's really the story of the entire event. Team Subaru, completely dominant in all facets of the event. People familiar with the championship will be aware that throughout 1999, there was only really a couple of seconds between outright winner Possum Bourne and Neil Bates in the Toyota, and similarly, not much between Cody Crocker in the Subaru and Ed Ordinski in the Mitsubishi. This year, Team Subaru, first round, they have come out and absolutely blitzed the competition, winning virtually every stage.
Yes.
The only stage which Possum Bourne wasn't able to win was when he suffered a flat tyre on, so a completely dominant performance.
Yeah, 1 minute and 3 seconds in Heat 1, taking the win there. And quite interesting, they reckon, well, if you read the press releases, it's a Pirelli victory. The Pirelli is just doing a fantastic job over the Michelins that were on just about every other car.
That's right, that's right. Possum said this evening that, look, the Pirellis have played a very important role in the victory. The event did come down to who could get the most grip to the road, and the Team Subaru has obviously been doing it with the Pirellis. The Michelins, we don't know what the problem is there. Neil Bates said to me earlier on that, look, obviously tyres are part of the package, but the car feels like it's running really well. I'm really happy with the car, he says, but when he gets to the end of the stage, Possum has gone, you know, up to a second, a kilometre faster on some stages, so a real worry there for Toyota Team Australia.
Mm. And of course, Ed Ordinski, certainly no stranger to the Western Australian roads, and couldn't keep up with the now two-time Group N champion of Cody Croker.
That's right. Again, possibly a little bit disappointing for Ed. He's in the Mitsubishi Lancer Evo 4, so a step up from the car he was driving last year. But again, he's a driver who you'd pay some homage to with his experience, and he said it was indeed a rally for the drivers with the best tyres. And again, we come back to the Pirellis absolutely doing the job. Team Subaru running the latest generation Pirelli tyre as developed for the World Rally campaign. Obviously, there's something very special about that rubber this weekend.
There it is indeed. And it did look like it was a bit of a dust bowl over there on some of the news footage I saw.
Yes, comments from a lot of the drivers back through the field that dust was a very big problem this year. Of course, that was one of the key reasons they had to move from the areas around Perth last year, the dust settling on some of the water supply areas and creating an algae problem there. So they've moved them down to get away from that, but the roads are fast, but still extremely dusty.
Well, Matt Waddell, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you here again on Inside Motorsport, and well, round two in the championship is actually at Coffs Harbour, but there is that little Asia-Pacific event that we're going to enjoy here in Canberra first.
That's right, not too far away at all. First week of May and second weekend in May for the actual championship. Fingers crossed Toyota Team Australia and Neil Bates can get the car on the pace before then, because they've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, we were speaking to Neil last week, and he was under the impression that he'd caught up. I guess there's a lot of work going to be done out at Hume over the next month.
That's right.
Matt Waddell, pleasure to catch up with you once again.
Thank you.
And, of course, Colin, interesting to see just what a difference that has made in the championship, with everyone thinking that it all closed up again, and, well, they have really set a cat amongst the pigeon, has the Subaru duo.
That's right, and of course interesting to see the fact that even Edzinski moving up from an Evo 3 to an Evo 4 just cannot match the pace of that Group N Impreza of Cody Kroger.
Mm. Now, before we go to our letter from America, I've got one more news story. As the Lanier National Speedway gets set for the opening event of the 33rd season of the American Speed Association with the BF Goodrich Tires 200, held on March the 20th. That was last weekend.
That's right.
So this is the result. I always thought I was doing a preview. But it is, well, the Speedway at Lakeland in Florida saw the 1998 ASA National Champion Gary Sainte-Amant pull out one of the biggest victories of his career. Sainte-Amant, who has also won the Snowball Derby down there in Florida, had seen the win in the first of 20 ASA AC Delco Series races, giving Sainte-Amant a lead over the 1997 ASA National Champion Kevin Kowinski by 8 points in the standings. Sainte-Amant led the final 85 laps en route to earning his 15th career victory. Sainte-Amant's win places him as the first driver to win a stock car race with the new GM Vortec ASA 57,000 factory-produced fuel-injected engine mandated for use in 2000. Now, ASA, to give you a bit of a history on, has been one of the forward-thinking bodies in American Speedway. They had been using V6 engines for a few years, coil-over shock absorbers, fiberglass bodies, and put on a great show for all the fans. Over the years, of course, the number of changes has seen the ASA moving away from its middle America grasp and has moved a lot further south. With the help of the Nashville Network, of course, they're using the ASA and the IHRA as their flagships for motorsport over the along with the World Series Spring, the World of Outlaws Series, as their flagships of motorsport. And the BF Goodrich Tractor Association, trading as the Radial Tyres, were the first to use radial tyres in the sanctioning body's history. Tim Sauter, the 1999 ASA National Champion, sits in third position with a workmanlike finish at the USA International Speedway. He is 20 points behind Gary Sainte-Amant, as is the 1999 Rookie of the Year, Rick Johnson. Brandon Sterling's outside pole sitter for the BF Goodrich Tyres 200 is fifth in the points, just 21 points behind Sainte-Amant, following a fifth place finish in the season opener. Son of legendary motorsport driver AJ Foyt, Larry Foyt, leads the Pat Schumer Memorial Rookie of the Year standings as his start of at the start of the ASA 33rd season. Foyt, who finished ninth in the event, leads Gary Sherman by 9 points, who sits 10 ahead of JC Beattie, who won the qualifying race on Saturday night prior to the event. And the ASA moves on now to the Discount Auto Parts 300, which will be at... and would you believe they didn't put the track in? In Georgia, by the looks of it.
Well, I think they do. Actually, moving to the other side of the pond, the Atlantic, final full-day testing for the season opener of the British Touring Car Championship, which takes place next weekend on April 9 at Brands Hatch Grand Prix Circuit, saw the British Touring Car Championship teams arriving and running at the Brands Hatch Indy Circuit, and as it was for most of the day, the Ford stars, Ricard Riddell, Alain Menu and Anthony Reid, took three of the top four times during the testing. The four drivers were 1-2-3 for much of the day, and only late in the day did Honda's Gabriele Tarquini manage to spoil what was looking to be a perfect day for the Ford team. So at this point in time, we had, following this group of testing, the fastest time of the day was set by Ricard Riddell in the Ford Mondeo from Alain Menu, also in Ford Mondeo, Gabriele Tarquini in the Honda Accord from Anthony Reid in another Ford Mondeo, then Jason Plato and Van Muller in the Vauxhall Vectras, and seventh fastest with privateer Matt Neal in his Team Dynamics Nissan Primera. Then languishing well down was the cars of James Thompson and Tom Christensen in the West Harry Racing Honda Accords. Vincent Rademacher running a Vauxhall Vectra was in 10th. Colin Blair running a privateer Nissan Primera 11th. Then we get into the production cars, and we had Simon Graves in his Honda Accord, Don Eves in a Peugeot 306, and Simon Harrison in a Ford Focus, and I've seen some reasonable times there. But as I say, next weekend sees the first round of the British Touring Car Championship at Brands Hatch.
Good evening all. Yes, last weekend was the first round of the Kart Championship. Kart seemed to have a painfully long off-season. Of course it was painful because a lot of people were still thinking about the loss of Greg Moore in the last race of last season. And moving to Homestead in Florida for last weekend's race, there were many people still thinking that the person who won last year at this track was Greg Moore. So a lot of people still thinking a bit about that one. But anyway, it was also a long off-season because there's a number of changes to a lot of these teams, people changing their chassis, engines, driver combinations, a whole host of things, many of which I've covered before. Dario Franchitti was expected to do extremely well because it was one team that really didn't have any changes. A few personnel changes on the pit crew and engineer side, but all in all, quite a stable team there. Most of the others, like the Target team, changing engines, Penske team coming from really the rear of the field, expecting big things there with changing chassis and engines. Many of the Ford teams watching the new Ford engine with interest to see if it would be as powerful as early testing showed, and how reliable would it be. Some big name changes throughout the field for the drivers in the Team Rahal. Kenny Brack from IRL, last year's Indianapolis 500 winner, moving into kart, and people will watch that one with interest to see how he performs as a rookie, but of course he has a great deal of experience from IRL and also internationally. So last weekend we get into our qualifying, and the changes at Penske seemed to pay off pretty well. Gilles Deferrin claimed pole, and it looked as though some fantastic things there, and he took that pace into the race quite well. It was only after a pit stop, which was immediately followed by a yellow flag, that did Deferrin sort of lose touch with the leading pack. So it was really bad luck rather than any poor performance that robbed him of really being prominent in the results. I'll just run through some of the results and add some comments about how various people performed. Max Pappas, that's right, Mad Max has finally won his first race. People remember last year in a couple of races he performed particularly well, and in one in particular where he was leading with one lap to go and ran out of fuel. So it really was just a matter of time until Max finally took out a victory.
Today we proved that we believed that we could make it happen. And in the Miller team, this feeling has been growing tremendously since the beginning of last year. We've been changing a lot our mentality, and it has been proved today. You know, we started all day, and we always believed we could make it. And as soon as Paul ran out a little bit in traffic, you know, I was just waiting for that moment, and you know, this is one of those moments that you cannot really calculate, and they just run a little bit wide to come off from the throttle, and I was right there to take the opportunity. But besides that, you know, was a, you know, was a very tough race, very competitive, and it's a great feeling to win my first race here, where my friend Greg won his first won the first race this year as well.
Some people are a little wary of Max. He seems to be a bit of a mobile chicane in some tracks, but he does definitely have the talent and the team behind him now to claim victories. Second place, Roberto Moreno. The super sub is no longer a substitute driver. He's got a full-time drive with the Patrick Racing team, and he's paying off that investment in him quite well by taking home second place. Paul Tracy from Team Green finished third, and Team Green had a horrible weekend, basically, and Paul did remarkably to claim a third place. He's really claimed something out of a weekend that they're trying to forget. Basically, they turned up at the track, unloaded the cars, and the drivers thought, hey, we've unloaded the wrong cars. They were just dogs to drive. And as it turned out, all of the good work that they put in off-season testing was really thrown away because of some poor record keeping. They just couldn't dial in the cars back to the settings that they had perfected during testing, and really had to start from scratch. And all of their qualifying and practice times were simply awful, starting way back in around the 20th position, both their drivers, Tracy and Franchitti. And they eventually got the car to be handling okay, and that's how Tracy got up to lead for many laps there towards the end of the race, but they just didn't get the handling right in traffic. And when Paul Tracy was coming up to some traffic with about 10 laps to go, Max Pappas passed him quite comfortably. It was still a team to watch, because this is the sort of thing that would just be a minor setback.
The first thing I'd like to say is I'd like to congratulate my friend Max. He's very deserving of this, and I know he's been waiting a long time and had a lot of emotional things happen for him, and it's good to see him, and good to see him smiling once again.
Thank you, Paul.
It's a great day for Team Cool Green. We didn't have a great car and didn't have a great car in the race, but you know, I think today we had about a 7th or 8th place car, and the job my crew guys did in the pit lane, and you know, I was just trying to do the best I could on the track. We had a pretty much the same as we've had all weekend. It's been a push condition in the middle and loose coming off, and did the best we could, got good points, and that's what we came here to do. So, you know, I think if at the end of the race, if we hadn't have had any lap traffic, I think I would have been okay, but you know, this is racing, you know.
And of course, Dario Franchitti, second place last year, he finished way back in 11th. He didn't quite get the fine tuning right in his car, and of course there were a few question marks still hanging over him after his big accident during practice a couple of weeks ago, which was some quite nasty injuries there, and he was only just fit enough in time to take his place in this race. Walks away with a couple of points, so it has been worthwhile to make that comeback a little bit early, and hopefully he'll be fighting fit, ready for the next race in Nazareth on April 9th. Running down the results a little bit further, Jimmy Vassa from the Ganassi team finished 4th. Where's Mr. Montoya, I hear you asking. The Toyota engine was fast, as proven by Jimmy's 4th place, but in Montoya's vehicle, it was seen to be a little fragile, and of course it let go quite early in the race, way back on lap 23. Another team having a few problems mechanically was the Newman Haas team. The new Ford engine, powerful for sure, but Michael Andretti, his engine let go way back on lap 37. The Ford engine, of course, was in Max Pappas' car that took him to victory, but I think it really was a 50-50 result throughout the field for these new Ford engines. The rookie Kenny Brack showed some great promise until his engine expired on lap 78. It's probably a 50-50 result for the Ford teams. They've still got quite a bit of work to do to get the reliability to match the new power there. As I said, Jules Deferrin, he led for a while, pitting just before everyone else benefited from a yellow, set him back. He finished back in 6th position. Christian Fittipaldi finished well in 7th in the Newman Haas. And the other rookie that showed quite a lot of promise is Alex Tagliani. He's actually Canadian, driving in the Forsyth team. He led for quite a few laps, had some problems on a pit stop. He passed the pace car. He was on the pit lane entry while the pace car was actually on the track. Just one of those silly little rookie mistakes that I'm sure he won't make again. The penalty arising from that one set him back, finished ninth, but he did impress many drivers there. So quite a mixed bag. Some of the lesser known drivers finished quite prominently. The real question is, how will they fare when some of the bigger names get the reliability that they need? Of course, that's Andretti and Montoya and Franchitti when he comes back up to speed. Then we'll see how some of these lesser names and some of the other teams with the changes fare, because it's a long, hard championship ahead. And a little bit of trivia for you. Kart, of course, is one of the great North American racing series. It's supposed to be a showcase of North American drivers. Hang on. There's only two born and bred Americans in the field, Jimmy Vassa and Michael Andretti. That leaves us with about 22 other drivers who come from other places around the world. And this may be an insight into why Kart are struggling to sell this series to many of the fans and the sponsors. That's just one of the challenges that they face. There's no shortage of effort on their part in terms of promoting and a lot of their promotional efforts. And if people are interested, they should log on to the web at www.kart.com, and they've got some neat innovation there on how to promote their series across the web. If you can't get to see the race live or on TV, there's some quite neat features there in scoring, listening into the Kart radio network, and also listening into the drivers and to the pits, the in-car radios. And that's quite neat across the internet. Anyone around the world can tune in for that one. So one championship that has been going for a number of weeks now, of course, is NASCAR. So I'll just give you a quick update to what's been happening there. The first six races of the year have produced six different winners. It's also produced plenty of memorable moments, such as the year kicking off at Daytona with defending champion Dale Jarrett taking an easy victory and walking away with a neat $1 million bonus prize there. A week later at Rockingham, Bobby Labonte, second from last year, he won the race. And then they've trooped off to Las Vegas, where Jeff Burton beat the weather, had an awful lot of luck, and also claimed a $1 million bonus prize there. The next race on their series was to Atlanta, and Dale Earnhardt, the old Intimidator, was back in victory lane, and that was quite a special race there for Dale and some of his many fans to see him back in victory lane. And they're talking about, can he claim another championship? Long way to go. We'll wait and see. 2 weeks ago at Darlington came one of the most popular wins in years, as Ward Burton captured his second ever career victory, and in quite a convincing style there. And so it's good to see the different people up on the in victory lane. Last weekend at Bristol, Rusty Wallace claimed his 50th race victory. Rusty was extremely pleased to achieve that milestone, and one of the classic quotes after the race was when he was asked whether he was going to celebrate the victory. He said, for Christ's sake, he's sponsored by a beer company. Of course he's going to have a big party. I'm sure he definitely did. So that's it in the world of North American racing. I'll keep you posted in the weeks to come. Until then, that's how I see it from over here. Thanks very much,
Peter Norton, for joining us once again on Inside Motorsport. I hope you can be with us next week when we'll have plenty more action.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via ComradeSat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.
Thank you. I'm going to go to the hospital.